You're listening to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. Drug shortages have been troubling anxious patients over the last couple of years, making medications like Adderall and penicillin difficult to secure. Now, vital drugs for cancer patients are also in short supply. It's leaving hospitals with difficult decisions to make about how to conserve and prioritize their supplies. Seattle Times staff reporter Nina Shapiro connected with local hospitals and patients to learn more about how the shortage of these drugs is impacting them. And Nina's here with me now. Hi, Nina. Thanks for being here. Welcome back to Soundside.
Thanks for having me.
In your article, you focus on the ways these shortages are impacting local hospitals, pharmacists, and patients. And I want to start by asking you about a cancer patient whom you connected with while you were reporting. And that's a woman named Norma Lind. Norma was diagnosed with advanced pancreatic cancer over 2 years ago. How is the drug shortage impacting Norma?
Yeah, it's a really interesting case because she was on a drug regimen that really worked miracles. She has a very advanced stage of cancer, as you said. And when she was diagnosed, she was told that she had a likely 6 months to a year to live. But on this regimen, she's made it 2 years so far and is doing really well. But because of this shortage of one of the key drugs that she's getting, they've reduced the amount of one of the drugs that she's getting called Florasel by about 20%. And so what this means isn't really clear. Like in a lot of these cases, doctors are, as one of the doctors said, taking their best guess about what will work. Some places in the country don't use this extra shot of Florasel that she was getting and that works so well. And so maybe her new drug regimen will work just fine, but we don't know. And so they're waiting to see what will show up on the CAT scan, whether the cancer will still be at the reduced state it has been on or whether it has worsened.
But to be clear, what's been working for Norma Lind is a certain amount of this drug Florasel, and now that is being reduced, not for a medical reason. Her doctors are reducing that because of this shortage.
That's right.
Drug shortages in the U.S. have been a problem for a while now. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration reported a record 5-year high of 295 active drug shortages at the end of 2022. But what makes this cancer drug shortage different, Nina? What are you observing?
Well, the difference is that cancer drugs are really life and death. And, when someone can't get the medication they need, it can literally either end their life or dramatically shorten their life. And there are alternatives for some drugs, and those might work. But again, we don't know if they will work as well in some cases. And in some cases, there really aren't alternatives. And so doctors are really forced with making these agonizing decisions. And I was really struck talking to doctors about how anguished they were. You know, one doctor at Seattle Children's told me, we're really being forced to choose between children. And looking at our list of patients, there's no child for which it doesn't matter. You know, every child matters that they're getting this medication. So how do we choose? And hospitals are being forced to consider that, if not right away, as some are, then they're drawing up plans for how they'll do that in the near future.
Yeah, and for more on that, we reached out to Dr. Tom Purcell, Chief Medical Officer for Fred Hutchinson Cancer Center here in Seattle.
We would first look at very specific curable situations that we would want to make sure that the drug is available for those particular patients if we had to prioritize that type of way. And then we look at what alternatives. Fortunately, the cancer discovery, there have been more alternatives recently, particularly in the realm of immunotherapy and other types of therapy. That does not mean that we're not making a choice here to say not use one of those drugs and use some of these other drugs. But in each particular disease, we have worked through the algorithm of how we would address this, a curative type of situation.
We're seeing these shortages across the state, both in rural and urban areas. Can you tell me about how the scarcity of these life-saving cancer drugs is being felt in a smaller healthcare system like Jefferson Healthcare in Port Townsend?
Yeah, right. It was really striking because whereas some institutions like Swedish, for instance, you know, they have enough for a couple weeks at least. And then after that, they don't know. So it's been very unpredictable for all hospitals. But at Jefferson, which is in Port Townsend, they were literally out of drugs when I first talked to them. I mean, they had one day's supply of two very, very key chemotherapy drugs. And then I talked to them a few days later and said, you know, well, what happened? Did you run out? And they didn't. They were able to hold that at bay for a little while. They did that by trading drugs with another institution. So they got some of one of the drugs called cisplatin. The other drug, they didn't get more supplies, but they were able to transfer a couple of patients elsewhere, and that stretched out their supply of carboplatin. But they're really down to very, very low supplies. And so the person I talked to at that hospital was very concerned about how to create an equitable rationing system throughout the state so that hospitals like theirs aren't dramatically more affected than hospitals in big urban centers like Seattle.
Yeah. Is there any roadmap for what these doctors are wrestling with? I mean, rationing these medications at Children's or at Swedish or at Jefferson, do doctors and hospitals and pharmacists learn how to do this in their training, or is this uncharted territory? I mean, it's creating these terrible decisions that seem impossible to weigh.
Yeah, I don't know if they wrestle with that in med school. I kind of doubt it. You know, the big societies of, you know, oncology societies, there are various branches of medicine that are looking at their field of medicine and trying to offer some guidelines of what to do in these situations. One common way that hospitals are looking at it is to look at who can be cured. So trying to save these medications for those whose lives they can, you know, actually, you know, save and you know, cure the cancer. But the conversation gets very tricky because, you know, sometimes cancer can't be cured, but the person can still live for decades.
Yeah, it's manageable.
Right. And sometimes you're talking not about a cure, but prolonging someone's life. And so let's say the difference with a key drug, you know, would be you could live for 2 or 3 years versus a year, say. So that's not a cure, but that's a pretty significant difference for that person. So they're very, very tricky conversations. And obviously, hospitals and doctors don't want to affect the lifespan of folks, and they're trying everything they can not to affect that, but they may be forced to make those decisions if solutions can't be found.
And sometimes that includes going with a second choice drug if the first choice drug is in very short supply. I was struck by a quote that you included in your piece from Dr. Michaela Tsai with Swedish's breast oncology program. And Dr. Tsai talked about patients' reaction when they were told that they have to forgo this first choice drug because of shortages. And you quoted Dr. Tsai as saying that the patients often, if they are in a situation where their cancer will not be cured and that they will eventually die from it, that the patients respond with, "I get it. I can't be cured. Give it to someone who can." But she said not everybody is that understanding. I mean, that seems like a terrible ethical choice. How are doctors coping with that?
Not well. I mean, I you know, I could hear the anxiety in their voices when I talked to them. And, you know, it's one of the few stories of talking to my editor where, you know, everybody was very eager, not everybody, but a lot of doctors were very eager to talk and be very open about it because they want attention to this problem. They hate having to make these decisions. It's a really big moral dilemma for them. And, you know, they're trained to save lives. They know what the best medications are, and they can't use it or won't be able to in the very near future. It's a really horrible situation to be in. And you're right that the reaction from patients, I mean, it's just remarkable how gracious some patients are. And even, you know, the first patient we talked about, Norma Lynn, she was also very, very gracious, very understanding. At the same time, you know, somewhat anxious because she didn't know, is this going to be as effective? The initial regimen she had been on was really grueling. She had been on an every other week infusion regimen, and, you know, made her exhausted, her hair fell out, that kind of thing. She was down to once a month. She had improved a lot. So if the cancer comes back, you know, what's that going to mean? Is she going to have to start it all over again?
Yeah. All of that hard work and pain and discomfort that she went through, what is going to happen now that this drug regimen is changing because of the shortages? Nina, have you reported on the reasons behind these shortages? What do we know about why this is happening?
Well, at the heart of it, it seems to be because these drugs are generic drugs and the profits are low on them. And there's some debate on why that is. Some blame price controls, but that's the heart of the problem. And also, these drugs are often made overseas. And so because they're low profits, not all that many factories make them. So if there's a problem with one factory and that factory goes offline, that creates an instant shortage. And that problem could be they could have trouble sourcing supplies. They could have problems getting workers. The FDA evaluation could cause a holdup. The factory may have to pause while they're being evaluated, or they could not meet the FDA regulations, and that could require an upgrade in their facilities. And they could say, you know, the investment isn't worth it because the profits are so low. So they're really big systemic problems, and the solutions aren't so obvious. I saw that the FDA was negotiating with China to import one of the drugs, cisplatin, and maybe there'll be more deals like that. Maybe the FDA can streamline its process. Maybe the price controls will be relaxed. I'm not sure, but as you mentioned in the beginning, this is a problem that's been going on for years for all kinds of drugs, and it hasn't been fixed so far.
What about on the state or local level? You mentioned potentially developing a framework for trying to at least share the pain across different areas of the state so that we don't see, for example, this Port Townsend healthcare system running out of a drug when it's available in other places. What kinds of solutions are being looked at the state or local level?
Know that they've gotten there, honestly. I mean, this nonprofit that I mentioned in the piece had started a conversation with everybody and had a lot of players on a conference call through, you know, hospitals throughout the state and the DOH and so forth. But it hadn't gotten to the stage of actual solutions. It was more assessing what the problem is. When I talked to DOH early in their reporting, they weren't really, at least publicly, coming up with any solutions or talking about the problem. So I think there's really a lot of work to do about what the state could do to help, or if not help, at least, as you say, share the burden.
And it sounds like you're saying that these healthcare providers are sounding the alarm, that there needs to be a change here because this is a real crisis.
Yes, absolutely.
Nina Shapiro with the Seattle Times, thank you so much for your reporting. And it's always great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Soundside. This show is only possible because listeners support us. If you're able to give right now, please check out the show notes for a link to donate. And don't forget, you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org.